The name's Rex. But you'll call me Captain or Sir.
War does not come with a guarantee. No soldier gets the promise of safety.
My designation is Trooper 27-5555, sir.
We call him Fives.
I'm Heavy.
This is Echo.
I'm Commander Cody, your new boss.
Sir, yes, sir!
Looks like we got ourselves a batch of shinies, Commander.
Look around. We're one and the same. Same heart, same blood. Your training is in your blood. And my blood's boiling for a fight.
So I hope any idea what this stuff
is our war.
This can't be good. We need to pull back. We're gonna get on the portals. If we can draw them out, we can see them. If we can see them, we can hit them.
I'm so happy and I'm crying right now at work because they just announced at the Clone Wars panel that they're going to finish Clone Wars. They're actually going to finish the show. And I'm having a panic attack. I'm so excited and happy. But yeah, they're going to finish Clone Wars. And I'm just so serious. I'm so happy right now. And I told you, you were like, yeah, now it's going to be a DVD. But now they're going to finish Clone Wars. I told you, I can get back to work now. I just want to tell you. That is going to take us forever to get to Rebels. Okay, I'll talk to you later. Bye.
All right, Rex. What's so important that you brought us all the way back here?
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hello, Master. It's been a while.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars! And this episode... Beep, 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 beep. We're getting a newsflash. It's coming along. What is it? This podcast is going to go longer because Clone Wars! Hi, Chris.
What is up with that?
So we wanted to do a very special episode of Clone Wars, of J-Guys and Jedi, because Comic-Con just happened, and then on the 10-year anniversary, we found out that they're finishing the show. They're going to be doing 12 more episodes of Clone Wars, and there's a trailer, and as you heard in the opening of the episode, I cried and called Chris as soon as I did, as soon as I found out, because I was at work when I found out, and I saw the panel, and they were like, oh, it's an announcement, and out of nowhere, my Twitter feed just exploded like, there's gonna be Clone Wars, and I literally just sat behind my desk, and I'm not kidding, and I, like, covered my mouth, and I just started wailing, just like, I started crying, and my coworker was apologizing for me. She was like, I'm so sorry for her. And I was like, Jim, I have to take a break. I have to go now. And that's when I left, and I called you, and I also called my best friend, Megan.
Hello.
Hello.
Who happens to be with me from Raleigh.
Hi, everyone.
So Megan, who Megan is, as you know, at the end of every episode, I'm like, and I'm writing a fan fiction, and I'm also beta reading a fan fiction called Valkyrie Strike. She writes Valkyrie Strike, and she's my beta reader for Forces of Gravity. She's my Thronster that I created.
She did.
So this is like Thrawn fan fiction ground zero tonight.
Yeah. So I figured we're going to talk a little Clone Wars and all the news from Comic-Con right fast, and then we'll talk a little Thrawn.
Sounds good to me.
You know who could be a possible character in that new season of Clone Wars?
Who?
Thrawn. Or at least you could have him in it. You could have an appearance by him.
You know, because... actually, that's one of the things we can talk about. They talked a little bit more about Thrawn Alliances, which is the new book that's out tomorrow for our time. on the new Thrawn book, and it takes place post season 5 of Clone Wars. So, and that was something that they talked about. And yeah. Padme, half the book is Anakin, Padme, and Thrawn, and the other half of the book is Vader and Thrawn.
There
so
you go.
It's going to be in that golden time period. So I doubt he's going to show up because they have 12 episodes.
He could show up for 2 seconds, but I'll bet, like, the first thing I found out about this coming back from work, Scott McGregor has given me a ride and filled me in. And that was the first thing he said is, yeah, now they can not only, like, finish the story up, but they can you know, mix some stuff up with Rebels and Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, you know?
Yeah. With 12, it'd be one thing if they were going to do, because, like, we know that they were going to go through 8 seasons, which would have been, like, what, something like 24 at the least episodes, 40 at the most episodes. But with the 12 episodes, what I'm wondering that they're doing is, because we have the 8 unfinished episodes on StarWars.com, and that, which is Utapau and Bad Batch, and in the trailer, when Anakin is walking out with Rex, there's another clone standing with him in the red armor, and he has a headband. That's Hunter from the Bad Batch. He's a Bad Batch character from that unfinished arc. So I'm wondering if they're... I'm so sorry. I know you... By the way, everybody, like, Megan just started watching Clone Wars, and she has not seen any of Rebels. Except for, like, an episode that I showed her.
She showed me some Thrawn episodes, yeah.
Of course.
So that's... So that we are trying to avoid spoilers for
that's
her.
That's legitimate research and not spoiling.
Yeah. So I'm assuming that they're either going to skip Bad Batch and Utapau, because technically they're out there on StarWars.com, or 8 of those episodes, of the 12 episodes, are going to be Bad Batch and Utapau. They're just going to finish those up, and then the last 4 is going to be Siege of Mandalore. That's my assumption that they're going to do, because they already have those episodes mostly done.
If I were them, I'd be keeping my options open for Season 8, too.
No, I think they're just going to wrap it up, because they're clearly doing Siege of Mandalore. That's why Bo-Katan is with Ahsoka in that show.
Yeah.
And that shot, because that's what Siege of Mandalore is Ahsoka coming and aiding, and then it leads right up to Episode 3, which was supposed to be the end of the series anyway. I feel like if they wouldn't show us what was supposed to be the end of the series if they weren't wrapping it up. Oh, Chris, I cried.
I'm convinced they're listening to us.
Our show?
Yeah.
No.
That's why they did this. They're timing it. They don't want us to end our Clone Wars coverage, so they timed it so it's going to be fairly close.
to when yeah,
you know, we could spin our wheels for a few weeks and probably like
Because the thing is, we're almost done with season 6, and we were going to watch Utapau and Bad Batch, but because they could be finishing it, so we might cover it twice, or maybe we can just recap it if we get to that point. Because that's the other thing. We don't have a release date. We know it's going to be on the Disney streaming service. And they've already said that that's not even coming out until 2019. We don't know when in 2019, and we don't even know that when it comes out, that Clone Wars will drop with it. So it might even come at a later date.
I think they're going to use that as one of their big selling points. So I'll bet you...
Oh, the entire Star Wars fandom just, like, subscribed to Disney.
Right, exactly. So I think it's coming out right away. It'll come out right away, you know what I mean?
But even then, like, we don't know when in 2019 it's going to come out. It could come out in fall. So I think you and I are going to be safe to at least squeeze a season of Rebels in there.
Yeah.
So, but...
Well, I'm just saying this. If you are listening, Lucasfilm Filoni people, you can communicate to us through the platitudes in the new episodes of Clone Wars.
Yeah.
If, you know, I know you put they put your name in a lot of the platitudes.
Oh,
but if they
I know.
Put my Facebook name, which is Art, if you could slide the word Art in there, right? And we're going to be dealing with Mandalorians. They're arty. If you could get one of those in the platitudes, we'll know that you're listening. And a nod's as good as a wink to a blind bat. That's all I'm going to say.
But I'm over the moon. You and I were talking about this the night before Comic-Con, and I was like, you know, there's going to be an announcement, and you're sitting here going...
I scoffed it off, didn't I?
You did scoff it off, and so I was like, at least they're probably going to be doing a 10-year anniversary DVD, and at most, I hope for Siege of Mandalore. And you're like, they're not going to finish the show. And that's why in the opening clip, and when you guys heard me crying, I was like, and you said they wouldn't do Siege of Mandalore!
Suck it, Honeywell.
Suck it. Hope was right! Hope was right! You know me, I always soak it up when hope is right. Yeah.
Well, they've got to milk as much out of it as they can.
Yeah.
They're like, well, this is something we can do.
You know, they're like, they definitely, the Clone Wars fandom never shut up in the last 4 years ever since it's been canceled. And, you know, Dave Filoni even said, like, we, if it wasn't for the fans, this would not have happened. And aww. I think it helped that, like, when Ahsoka and Rex and stuff comes into Rebels, and that helped kind of keep it going and stuff. But they never stopped rooting for Clone Wars. They loved it so much. And I think that, I mean, it was the fans that kept it alive, and I think they're finally rewarding us. And somebody was joking on Twitter, like, this is the most that the Star Wars fandom has been together since Force Awakens.
It'll be odd. It'll be the most George Lucas. It'll be weird. It'll be the first Clone Wars without George Lucas involved.
That's very true. And, God, I know.
Or will.
Anakin looks so much like Episode 3, and again, I'm so excited. You said it looked clunky, though. I thought it looked real nice.
Oh, the backgrounds looked nice. The characters looked a little bit clunky, but I imagine that's because they were putting it together for... I mean, I think that whole thing was... I don't think that thing was put together from clips from the show. I think it was... They put it together from whole cloth for Comic-Con. So it's not full... You know, they probably didn't have the time and the money to fully animate it, you know what I mean? Go over it with as much of a resolute. They did the background, but the thing about the backgrounds is you can sort of do a beautiful painting for the background and go with that. So they just worked with the design of it and the color and the lighting, and it didn't matter how high quality it was, because I wasn't expecting... I'm surprised that they actually did more than just sort of that, you know, stylistic trip down the trench made out of two rows of clone helmets, you know, and then the bomb starting. I thought that was just a nice little symbolic thing. But I think you'll probably have a scene similar to that where they get, you know, come here, Anakin, somebody wants to talk to you. But I'll bet you it's different, you know. I'll bet you they just know that's going to happen in it. So they set that up. But
so I heard somebody was like analyzing the trailer. Somebody was analyzing the trailer and were saying like all the clone helmets just to be exploded is to show like these people are together for a destructive means that they can't control. And I was like, that's my clone babies. I love that. You know, I have to say I'm surprised, but also not surprised that they didn't have more resistance news. They didn't have any resistance news for in falls 2-3 months away. But yep. D23 is in August, but it's in late August. And by then, I feel like Resistance will just about to be coming out. So I'm just surprised that we didn't have at least, like, a trailer for Resistance.
So the only thing that we've seen anything of is that picture you I don't know if you sent it to me or sent me a link to it or whatever. But
But, like, D23 is August 23rd. And I thought at least for sure they were going to at least have something, and they had nothing, and so I'm just a little bit surprised by that. But well, I guess we'll have to see.
Yeah, maybe they didn't want to do it together with Clone Wars so that the two of them wouldn't, you know, sort of take the air out of each other's sails, you know what I mean?
Although a lot of people are like, forget Resistance, we're getting more Clone Wars, yay.
The thing about Comic-Con is you get that just wave of, and yesterday was the day I sat down and just typed in the words on YouTube, Comic-Con trailer 2018, to see what they all were.
Man, I like that Aquaman trailer and the Shazam trailer, man.
I gotta
You're shaking
say,
your head.
I liked both of them too. I wasn't expecting to like Aquaman. There are things about the Aquaman that I don't... There are things about the Aquaman that I don't like, but...
Well, Megan's over here shaking her head.
I agree. I did not... Well, you said you did like the Aquaman trailer. I did not.
It didn't look bad. It looked like it could be a fun story. You know,
It has Jango Fett in it.
It's very similar to Black Panther in a lot of ways, with like a hidden society, and the danger is one of the guys in it is going to go after the outside world.
That's
but whatever.
True.
But the only thing that I didn't like about it was, you know, there's scenes of he and his super bright red haired girlfriend like having a romantic scene talking to each other, with the ocean behind it. But it's obviously like a CG ocean, and it's like, why not film them in front of the real ocean? It would be so much more. It would feel like they were actually. It doesn't feel like they're in the ocean, and he's a very nature-based superhero, so why not get as much real water going on to make it feel like that, you know? But as far as a DC movies go, it doesn't look like it's completely, like, plotting and depressing.
That is true. It does look like it might actually be entertaining. But I agree, the CGI, I feel like the effects were not very good. It reminded me of Jupiter Ascending. Is that what it's called?
I haven't seen that. I want to see that, but I know what you mean. It's like really busy, but still looks a little cartoony at the same time.
Yes, very bright, lots going on. And you're like, ooh, I don't know what any of this is or what it does, but it looks cool.
Like cartoony paintings almost.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah. And that always worries me because I feel like they're trying to hide something.
Well, it's hard to tell nowadays because half the time, like, the CG it's one of the last things to finish.
And trailers do one or two things. They either tease you enough or they tell the entire movie in the trailer.
Well, the thing is you can finish the CG, basically, and then it's just a matter of adding more and more resolution to it, which is just like a sort of process. So... You know, you can get, like, the scene playing out, but you have it, like, half resolution where it still looks really good, but it has to really go through and fill it in, and it's just going to be computer farms doing that for, like, the month before it comes out. So you never know when you're seeing... I thought that about Solo, too. I was like, oh, this might be a little dark because the CG's not done, but then it came out and it was still dark, so...
It was very dark. It was very, very dark.
You liked Solo.
I did, but it was dark. Like, dark as in, like, I can't see what's going on.
I know.
So the lighting was dark, yes, it definitely was.
So a 13-year-old friend of mine says, oh, I think it's dark to represent Han Solo's darkness in his soul, and then it gets bright at the end. And I was like, wow, that's very perceptive.
That's true.
I don't know if that's true.
I think it was dark because they filmed it twice and they probably had to cover up some effects that weren't completely done.
That's exactly what I think. They're like, there's no scenery here, and we've already spent over almost $300 million on this movie. So, black.
Just to write fast, some other Star Wars news that came out at Comic-Con. So they did a series, the book. They had a book panel where they were announcing all the new books and talking about the new ones. The big one that I was excited about is that, like I said, Tony Vizon was there to talk about Thrawn Alliances, which is out tomorrow, and I'm going to buy it tomorrow. And we're hoping it drops on Megan's Kindle tonight at midnight. We're hoping, because I'm going to pick mine up after work tomorrow, or before work, depending on what time I get to work. But so the guy who does the audiobook actually read a passage from it, and people were like, you could hear a pin drop in that room because he did like a live reading of it. But the other stuff that's coming out is they're doing a Padme Amidala book that, according to this, it's written by E.K. Johnson, who did the Ahsoka novel, and it will focus on Amidala's transition from Queen of Naboo to powerful senator. With the help of her handmaidens, Padme would learn just how treacherous Coruscant's political landscape is. And that's scheduled to release on March 5th. And I'm just like, fuck yeah, give me a Padme book.
Huh, March 5th of 2019?
Yep.
Okay.
And then another major novel, Lucasfilms Publishing, has announced that the panel is also set in the prequel era. Writing about General Leia in Bloodlines and her younger self in Leia, Princess of Alderaan, Grey will write about Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan Kenobi in Star Wars Master and Apprentice. Set in the period leading up to The Phantom Menace, the novel will explore the mission the Jedi were on before they were pulled into an adventure that would alter their lives forever. I think it's fucking Satine background, how Obi-Wan met Satine, bitches! If it's not that, I'm gonna cry!
So, like, Moulin Rouge? You're talking about that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you haven't met Satine yet.
Yes, I have.
Oh, you have met Satine. Oh, yeah.
I did.
And Moulin Rouge.
Yeah.
Chris hates Moulin Rouge.
I can see why.
I did not like it at all. I mean, I should like it. I did not like the execution of it at all.
Yeah.
Like, I was actively getting angry through the whole movie. I was getting angry at my two friends who brought me over and were like, oh, you have to see this movie. It was made for you. And I'm watching it going, you don't know me at all. And then we tried to make it all better by watching Alien versus Predator, and that was terrible, too.
I've heard, yes.
And then the other one is a coffee table book with profile. It's called Star Wars Women of the Galaxies, Profiles 75 Women of the Star Wars Universe, and it includes art by Annie Stroll, Annie Wu, which I love Annie Wu's art, Chrissy Chung, Genevieve Bowers, Jennifer Alberin, Jennifer Parks, Karen. Pretty much it's a profile book of 75 women of Star Wars, and they had photos, and there's like one of Ahsoka and Rae Sloane's in it, and of course Leia's in it, and it looks like an absolutely gorgeous book, and I'm very, very excited about that one. And then they listed a bunch of like new like kids book, like Pirate's Prize by Louis Anders and Annie Woon, showcases Han and Chewie meet a pirate Hondo and Naka of Clone Wars fame, Star Wars Choose Your Destiny book, a Luke and Leia adventure, Star Wars Lando's Luck from Star Wars Lando's Luck follows Lando and L337 from Solo on a fun mission back when Calrissian was still in possession of the Falcon. Are You Scared, Darth Vader? Which is a board book for toddlers to help learn numbers and letters.
That's adorable.
Oh, they show pictures of it. It's actually kind of creepy. So it's like, does this monster scare you, Darth Vader? And it's like, no, the monster doesn't scare me. And it's like discovering like what Darth Vader is scared about, and he has to face himself at the end.
Aww.
I was like, this is terrifying for a toddler.
I'm telling you, I have a lot of, basically when I'm in a garage sale, I just, unless it's like priced ridiculously, and books never are, I pick up, if it's a Star Wars book and I don't have it, I pick it up if it's made, even if it's written for 3-year-olds.
Sounds like a good policy.
So I end up with a lot of those Star Wars books, and they're kind of, you know, it's kind of weird because they're taking, sometimes you have scary characters like Darth Vader and they're like making him kind of cute sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
I just got 3 Lego ones this weekend. Lego Star Wars Force Awakens, Lego Star Wars Free the Galaxy, and Lego Star Wars Secret Battles.
And then the other one is Star Wars Searcher Feelings, a book from authors Kelopi Glass and Caitlin Kennedy, and artist Katie Cook, designed to help kids identify with their emotions.
I thought
it was going to be like a relationship book, like self-help book for Star Wars geeks that have gotten married or something.
That's what I thought at first, too. So it's like there's pictures and like, which character do you feel like? And
I don't know.
Point at it, I wonder.
Oh, by the way, Chris, I've been telling Megan about your Fry Anakin.
Yes.
Your Fry guy, teenage Anakin. You must do that.
Oh. What's this? Is this the force that I'm feeling right now?
I feel funny.
Is that the force? Because it makes me want to go back to my bunk.
There's also the gosh, Padme.
Oh, that's older Anakin. That's when he gets into like, come on, Padme. It's more like the Napoleon Dynamite. God, Obi-Wan. Can we just go? God.
That's the one that sounded like the book reading of Anakin.
So slightly older, bossy. Love it.
Eat your casserole, Padme. But yeah, that was pretty much all the big news that came out of Comic-Con, but Clone Wars was definitely the one that took the cake.
Clearly.
Yeah.
I mean, I clearly have more midichlorians than anybody here. Why don't y'all just shut up?
Oh, poor Anakin. It's a sad story.
Yeah. So, you are watching Clone Wars.
Yes, I have been.
So, why did you start watching Clone Wars? Pretty much after 10 years of me trying to force you to watch it.
Yeah, Hope's been telling me about Clone Wars for a very long time. I guess since it came out, I suppose. Or did you watch Rebels first?
And no, Rebels came out much later.
I know, but yeah. You were watching Clone Wars.
I watched
and then
Clone
Rebels
Wars in college
out.
When it was
okay.
running. So
clones
since we
were Clone. Hope's an OG. A clone OG. clone G.
I just didn't finish it until after I got out of college and it was on Netflix. That's when I finished it. It was like 2016 when I finished it.
I see. I've been a casual Star Wars fan since high school when I watched the original trilogy on VHS. I picked them up at a yard sale. But not a huge fan. I liked the movies. I thought they were good. And so when Hope told me to watch Clone Wars, I was like, oh yeah, I'll watch it one day. And then she told me to watch Rebels. And I was like, oh yeah, sounds good. I'll probably watch it one day. And I was recently on a business trip. And Hope said, I wrote this fanfic. I mean, I probably may not understand it much because I know you haven't watched Clone Wars or Rebels, but I'd like for you to read it and give me some feedback, right? Did you say that?
That was pretty much it. I was I need you just, it's a romance and you know I'm unsure when I write romances.
And a few days earlier, actually, my husband had been telling me about some of the Star Wars Legends books. And he said, oh, yeah, there's this guy named Thrawn in them, and he's kind of like Sherlock Holmes. He's really good at figuring stuff out.
And you're a big Sherlock Holmes fan.
I am. And he.
So that was his trick to get you to read it.
Well, no. It's coming. So Hope said that Thrawn was in her story, and I was like, oh, yeah, I've heard of him. My husband mentioned him the other day. He's smart, right?
And yeah.
She was like, yeah.
He's like, kind of like Sherlock.
And I was like, okay. So I start reading her fanfic, and it's cheesy in the best way. It's so romantic. And I was completely hooked. I was like, Hope, this is wonderful. And she's like, yeah, you gotta start watching Clone Wars so you can get to Rebels. I was like, okay. So I finally started watching.
So you got hooked in from
fanfic. 10 years, all I had to do was write a dumb fanfiction to get you to watch it.
Hey, whatever works, right?
So...
And then you read the Thrawn novel.
And then I read the Thrawn novel. Shortly after that, Hope gave it to me, and I listened to it on the drive down to Georgia. So listened to it for about 6 hours straight, and I'm a thorough Thrawn fangirl.
That's funny because
you're reading Heir to the Empire.
And now I'm reading Heir to the Empire.
Yeah, my when we went garage sailing this weekend, my ride picked up the entire Zahn trilogy and hardcover, the original hardcovers of it.
Ooh, yeah. Nice.
That was his big find of the weekend, it turned out.
Was it Dario or Scott?
Scott.
Scott, you lucky asshole.
Yeah, Dario's back in New York City.
Nah.
Which isn't, you know, I know we're in New York, but it's a long way from us.
York's a big state.
Yeah, he lives in Rochester.
Everybody, when I say I'm in New York State, they're all just like, oh, blah, 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 Manhattan. And it's just like, yeah, 6 hours away.
So I'm enjoying Clone Wars, much to Hope's chagrin. My husband looked up a list of, like, essential episodes in chronological order. So we haven't watched all of it, every episode.
They're hopping around, Chris. They skipped Trespass with Rio Chuchi, and I'm not okay.
Hope has also given me a list of the ones we need to watch, so we'll go back and watch some of those, the important ones that Hope says we have to watch. But I'm really enjoying it. I like that
you're watching it in chronological order, which is something that we constantly talk about on the podcast that was a problem in Clone Wars, because they're like, oh, we go from season one to season three,
yeah,
and then to
yeah.
season two.
They go all over the place. But what do you think? What do you think of the prequels? Did you watch the prequels?
Oh, so preface. Remember when I asked the question of does Clone Wars make the prequels better? It was from my talk with Megan.
Right, that's right.
I can't stand them. They are, I believe, bad works of filmmaking and bad works of storytelling.
Why?
Oh, I could answer that, even though I don't agree.
So first of all, the storytelling, it's choppy. Like, I can tell, oh, someone wrote this, and they would like for this to be the way things go. And I feel like every single movie is like that. It's like, oh, this is the plot of this film that I am watching.
Wow, that's...
But it doesn't feel like,
You just articulated something that I haven't been able to articulate before. I totally agree with that.
the characters don't really behave in a way that makes a lot of sense, and nothing really seems to be motivated. So it leads to this kind of strange duality of, okay, I see where the movie's going, and it technically makes sense, but I don't feel like any of these characters think it makes sense. So it's difficult to follow, even though the plot itself is very simple of most of the movies. It's like very simple. This happens, this happens, this happens. But it doesn't really add up because the characters aren't acting in a way that matches their emotions.
Right.
And
it just gets worse and worse by the time you get to the third one, which is called what again?
That's Revenge of the Sith.
Revenge of the Sith. When Anakin turns dark, he has this kind of, I guess I'm evil now, look on his face, and it's very confusing.
That part actually worked like gangbusters for me for some reason. Like, mm-hmm. I actually found myself in the theater, like, rooting for him not to turn, even though, you know, it's sort of the crux of the whole prequel trilogy, and there's the other movies are already done, so I was still like, oh, he could still chop off Palpatine's head. Oh. But I think, like, if George Lucas had gotten another director and maybe had hired Carrie Fisher to do some script doctoring on that, you know, if maybe that would have been a good use for J.J. Abrams, just bring him in and put some humanity into it, you know what I mean?
But you also hate J.J. Abrams.
I do mostly hate J.J. Abrams, but he understands the emotional underpinnings of generally that era of movie making. Like, he seems to nail the emotional stuff without being able to get the physical stuff that also went hand in hand with it, which is usually the opposite of what most filmmakers do. But you end up,
that's
like, Force Awakens, like, was thin on story and thin on anything really new happening. It was kind of a remake, but it had the emotional feel of a Lucas or Spielberg production from the 80s. Watching it was like when a new Lucas or Spielberg movie would come out, and I was a kid, it captured that same feeling.
That's a good point. I don't think J.J. Abrams is a horrible filmmaker or anything, so I think I agree with you that he does capture emotion well, and he's good at getting performances out of people. But
I always refer to Super 8, the movie Super 8, if you ever saw that. Which was,
I think so,
Spielberg actually, like, was executive producer of it. And it was a total, it was basically Stranger Things before, you know, 10
Stranger
years
Things
before
was a
Stranger
thing.
Things. It was his version of a 80s movie with a bunch of kids, with one kid being him, you know, like a Spielberg movie. There were a bunch of kids that wanted to make a movie, and then they accidentally film a train crash. Well, you know, they're like, we need a train coming in the background of our scene, and the kid who's the director is very driven to make a movie, so he's like, we'll sneak out to the train lot, and I found out there's a train, you know, when a train goes by, we'll start filming, and the train crashes, and it turns out it's like a government train with a space monster in it that gets loose.
But
that element of it is very rote. Sort of 80s monster movie, but the kids in it are all very real kid, you know, they act like real kids, and the kid who's the director is in love with the girl who's, they get to act in the movie, but she likes the kind of cooler, thin kid, you know, and there's, you know, there's all those sort of, all their interactions ring really true, and that's like the core of the movie. The alien thing is like, it's cool, but you know, but he captured that sort of E.T. feel of childhood feeling that they had. I think basically that was like a magic trick that he pulled off for Force Awakens, and I think he should go away after that.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about the third one.
Me
but
too.
Anyway, and so now that my husband and I are watching Clone Wars, we're like, oh, we're seeing, like, real people doing these things now. And Anakin's a person, and he has a personality. Wow, that's interesting.
Because George Lucas is doing what he does best, which is like, here's a cool ship. Hey, I have some I have some ideas for some story elements, and then you give them to somebody else, and then they craft them into something dramatic. You know what I mean?
I've been praising, like, Dave Filoni for years.
Oh, he's incredible. I can tell that he has a vision, and it's being executed on screen in a way that makes sense.
In my opinion, Filoni and Rian Johnson right now are the torchbearers of Star Wars, the people who understand Star Wars the most, mm-hmm. that I would trust it in their hands. Filoni especially. Ryan Johnson's only got one movie under his...
that came out, and I don't know who it was from Lucasfilms, but they were like, Dave can do whatever he wants, so we'll give him anything he wants.
He better. I mean, he really hasn't screwed up at all. And, you know, six seasons of, you know, what a probably about, you know, I don't know how many episodes totally, but what, roughly 100 hours of Star Wars, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Of, like, well, really high quality. There's, Dave, I think we've discussed this before, that, like, if you take time on just a timestamp measure, that Dave Filoni has made more quality Star Wars than George Lucas has.
That's amazing.
Because, actually, yeah, we were talking about the comparisons. I was having this, I think it was with, maybe it was Patrick Delmer, but we were talking about the differences between Bodhi Rook and Hera Syndulla. And because he was saying that Rogue One characters aren't really developed, I'm like, well, they only had 2 hours. I mean, Hera and Bodhi are both pilots, but Hera's had like 40 something hours to develop. You know, there's only so much you can do in a 2.5 hour movie, and I think Rogue One did everything you needed.
That's split between all the other characters. It's also split. They're also 20-minute episodes and stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, they do have more time to develop the characters, but I will say they're very good at developing the characters without making it seem like they're, you know, it's very organic within the stories and it fits with everything. It's just, there's always been fantastic writing on Clone Wars. I mean, not every single episode's well written, obviously, but for the most part they are.
Well, I found that all the episodes, and obviously we've skipped a few, and we're not that far into it. I think we're into part of season 3. I can't remember.
And that's skipping around season 1 and 2, too?
Yes.
You like Cad Bane.
I did. I liked Cad Bane. What's the episode with the Godzilla creature in it?
Oh, the Zilla Beast. We love that episode.
Oh, my God. Like, that was heart-wrenching, and I cried in the scene. Oh, my God. I'm so horrible. I'm such a horrible Star Wars fan. Grievous. And the Grievous episode. I almost cried.
That was the one with Gore?
Gore?
He loved Gore.
Oh,
Grievous
yes.
Gore. Is his favorite character.
Seeing like why he looks the way he does and all of his equipment and everything, and just seeing him as a tortured person. And I think, why? How did they not manage to do this before? And now they're doing it in this kids show, quote unquote. And it's amazing. Every episode I've seen has been high quality and it all makes sense and the characters are behaving in a realistic way. And
they're free, like in the Zillow Beast, they're like, let's do a Star Wars show that's like, it's got equal parts Star Wars, Godzilla, and King Kong, you know?
Yeah.
In King Kong, you feel sorry for the monkey, and Godzilla, you don't. You're scared shitless of the monkey, or the
and
Godzilla.
And it was incredible. And I was really impressed. I guess it was last April? Was it April? I guess it was April when I was here. And
I think so.
So I'd been listening to the Thrawn book. I wasn't finished with it yet. And Hope was like, oh my God, let me show you a couple of Thrawn episodes of Rebels. And I was like, okay, this is a kid's show. There's no way that the Thrawn from this book is going
to
be.
I think it shows you the one where Ezra snuck onto the ship to extract Kallus.
Yes.
And Kallus chose to stay.
Yes.
That was the one
and
I
showed
you.
Showed me a couple of other clips. You showed me the clip of him talking to Hera and that they have that
The Calicori, the little family heirloom.
And I was shocked by how, in just, you know, a couple of clips from a kid's show, they were able to capture this character who's incredibly complex. And they do an amazing job. I'm a full-on Filoni fan as well.
What's your favorite part of Clone Wars, now that you're watching it and stuff like that? Or maybe some of your favorite characters?
Well, I like... In the prequel trilogy, I liked Anakin and Obi-Wan together. You know, I could imagine what their relationship may have been like in a realistic human setting. And I really like seeing the way they interact. And of course, his relationship with Ahsoka is really interesting. Lauren and I both had a moment where we went, ooh, Ahsoka, I don't remember what season or episode it's in, but Ahsoka says something like, yeah, I'm not sure how well Anakin's going to do when the war is over. He's kind of an action guy.
Oh, that's the Geonosis arc.
And we were like, whoa, okay.
Because she was talking with her friend.
Yeah.
That was Barriss, yeah.
And I'm she so said, yeah, his politics, they're kind of, We were like, oh my gosh, that's so weird and creepy. So I like seeing, because when I was a kid and the prequels came out, I was like, oh boy, Darth Vader. I don't think I'd even seen the original trilogy yet. But I was so excited because I loved villains. And I was like, we're going to get to see Darth Vader become Darth Vader. And I watched the movies and I was like, eh. So now watching Clone Wars and getting to see Anakin become Darth Vader is incredibly exciting because I'm actually seeing it happen. Like when he tortures that guy, someone's captured, maybe Ahsoka is somewhere, or Padme, and there's a bad guy.
Oh, it's Cad Bane. He tortured Cad Bane to see where the Jedi kids were.
Oh. Okay.
And it was him, Obi-Wan, and Mace Windu, and they were using the...
No. He tortures someone alone. It's like a Trade Federation goon.
Oh.
And he goes in there, and he's like, I'll get the information.
And they were all like, what the hell did you just do?
And he's like, I had to do what I had to do. And we're like, oh my god, he's evil. And yeah, so I'm really enjoying that.
So Anakin's your favorite character?
I don't know if he's my favorite character, but it's definitely the part that I missed the most in the prequels because I was looking forward to it. So I'm excited to see it in Clone Wars.
Now that you're actually watching it, like, what are the things that you're, I guess, hoping that they'll do, but what do you feel like they could do better?
You're always talking about how you love the clones and how you think they're great and everyone's wonderful. And I guess this is because we may have skipped some of the episodes. I have a lot of difficulty telling them apart and knowing who they are. And This is something that my husband is really big concerned with. The fact that they humanize them, but at the same time treat them like nothing at the same time. And
that's one of the biggest points about them.
Yeah, that's why it's
so skeevy that the Jedi are doing that.
Yeah,
that's like a running theme that we've thought at first was just sort of like, well, I guess you'd compare it to, remember the Jar Jar candy where he would stick out his tongue and it was a piece of candy
that.
And you would have to like make out with Jar Jar Binks where you're like, man, that's messed up. But, you know, they didn't mean for that to be messed up. They just didn't think about it. But like after the first couple, three seasons of Clone Wars, you start realizing... Yeah, you're meant to start realizing how messed up the whole clone situation is. And you know, you have Yoda humanizing them right at the beginning, but at the same time, you can't get past that they're cannon fodder. And they have to dehumanize them at the same time. It's sort of, you know...
Like the episode where the mind control bugs are getting into them, and they're like, that's my friend! Oh, well. Kill, kill, kill. It's like, oh, they could have gotten better. They could have gotten better. So I guess the
one I'm wondering if you skip, because it's very early on season one episode, and it's called The Hidden Enemy. And the part of the, there's a somebody sabotaging their base.
Mm-hmm.
So Rex and Cody are having to investigate who is sabotaging their base.
Is this when they're out on that big island?
No.
Okay.
They're actually like on a base. And,
right, but like there's a base on an island, and it's just like this laid back. They're all like, oh, this is the best place to be. Nothing ever happens here.
No.
Okay, it's not that one. All right.
No, that's a different one. Yeah.
But pretty much what it is, they realize the person who's sabotaging their base is a clone.
I don't think I saw that one.
And the clone is sitting here. Ventress was in it.
Oh.
And what it is the clone has realized that they're cannon fodder.
Ooh.
And they're speaking, and he's like, we're slaves. And he's like, you Jedi are treating us like slaves. And Rex and Cody face him. And they have to like think about that too.
Wow.
So I mean that's actually like one of my favorite parts, because like then when you get to episode 3 and you're watching them just kill Jedi, it's just heart-wrenching.
So I guess that's really my only complaint, is that I sometimes have difficulty telling them apart. They're not doing a very good job of distinguishing them as characters.
Pretty much the only big clones are like Rex, Fives, and Cody. I mean, like, all the other clones, like, if you really wanted to delve into, like, I know the clones so well because I've rewatched, they're my favorite element, so I've watched those episodes over and over and over again. I can, like, look at it and be like, that's Kix. And I know because of his hair and how he acts and stuff.
Yeah.
But that's, I feel like
that's you too.
The clone. Yeah.
I think they went to extra lengths to make Rex, they gave Rex the J-Guys on his helmet So yeah. You'll always be able to find Rex. That's how in my early days of doing this podcast with Hope, when I would go out looking for Clone Wars toys.
The only reason he knows them as well is because I'm just like, look at baby Tom, Chris.
I know how important it is to, and I would be at garage sales picking up clone troopers and checking their helmets to see if they had the Rex. I got a Rex. Okay. Here's one for Hope, you know.
I think I sent him like a little, because I have this like little ornament that I have right here, and I mm-hmm. sent him one, and it was red. And I was like, I sent you Commander Fox, and he's like, I don't know who this is.
That's so, the only reason you didn't get the Clone Wars blanket I got at the garage sale is because it's just got a random clone trooper on it. It doesn't have Rex on it.
The way I
really don't have any complaints. I think it's all been really good.
The way I kind of like is how I talk to my stepmom about Game of Thrones, because my I'm watching Game of Thrones with my stepmom. And she was like, I'm having trouble remembering all the characters. And I was like, if you remember who they are, that's why they're important. Those are the most important characters. And I kind of feel like that way about the clones.
Well, all you got to do is keep watching, though, because they'll keep reminding you in the show. They know that there's 8 million characters. So so if you just keep watching, you go, oh, yeah, that's the guy who cut that person's whatever off. Because somebody's
Game of Thrones here, not Clone Wars, right?
Yeah. But like, it's like that in Clone Wars. Like, pretty much if you remember that character, that's important. It's not important to know who Jesse and Kix are. If you want to deep dive into the fact that Kix is the only clone that makes it to the Force Awakens timeline, because it's in that book right there, it's a deep dive thing.
He must be very old.
He was kind of cryogenically frozen, and they unfroze him, and he was just like, "I'm gonna burn." He's like, "Where am I?" And they're like, "You're in like 20 years later." And he's like, "Fuck, my friends are dead."
And I guess the other thing, it isn't really a complaint, but my husband and I have a thing that we say at the end of Batman the Animated Series episodes that are traumatic. We're like, you know, for kids.
Right.
And we've had a few of those moments of Clone Wars, like the one where they have the disruptor and they fire it and they just start killing clone troopers on screen. We're just like, I had to close my eyes. I was like, this is horrible. So they seem to be a little confused about who their audience is.
Well, originally it was actually supposed to be a PG-13 show on Cartoon Network. And that's what George Lucas wanted to be. Well, in the beginning, they couldn't quite go there, so they progressed it.
Oh, well, it seems like it was there from the start. Because
we were talking, like, during the Geonosian arc, is like, that's a brutal arc when they're fighting all the bugs, and bugs are exploding, and clones are, like, ships are on fire, and clones are hanging out of it.
Oh, yeah, that was really horrible.
The difference is there's no blood. If there was blood, they wouldn't be able to do it.
You know, somehow the blood doesn't really make a difference to me. It's pretty equally horrific, actually. Like, I think we watch a clone trooper get a lightsaber through the chest, like right on screen.
Dangerous. Yeah, I love it.
And then he gets a nice little smooch, too.
Yeah. What was that?
Then he gets a little smooch, too, just to add to the...
I think I blocked that out.
Just to add some extra sadism to it.
Ventress plotline.
Then you saw 99. The old crippled.
Yes. Lauren was like, that's horrible.
And he's like, I'm a real clone trooper now. And then he gets gunned down.
Yes, it was awful. This is not a human. This is PG-13.
That's
this
a full out cackle there, Hope.
And then the little Y7 pops up in mocking at the corner of the screen. I was like, I would not let my 7-year-old watch this. This is,
But what about Ventress? You're about to say something about Ventress.
Well, the whole Ventress plot line with the poo-poo. Dooku.
Count poo-poo?
Yes. Being forced to let her go, and he just lets her get killed. Well, he thinks he's getting her killed.
Have you met the Night Sisters yet?
Yes, that whole arc. I did.
We
that
love
moment.
The Night Sisters.
They were really great and really creepy. And
we liked it because it showed a different side of the Force too. Because it's dark side,
interesting.
But it's magic and it's a completely different side of the Force.
And they have this like creepy colony of men that they go and just pick from. Like it's all very.
I didn't realize you were that far along. Okay, you're farther along than I thought you were.
Yes, that's where I think I've even seen some episodes past that. I don't remember.
But
it's been a while since we watched.
That's another thing
Trek.
I like about it is how much they showed like different sides of the Force.
Oh, it's great, and they handle it all really well.
It's believable that there's witches that use the dark side magic.
Yeah,
and now
it's
starting to pay off.
It could be so easily like so kooky but they handle it in a way to where it's not kooky.
Well, and it's paying off in the new movies. In the Rogue One, you've got the Wills.
With Sherrod and Baz,
Guardians of the Wills, who are using the Force in different ways. And, you know, The Last Jedi was all about the Force, you know, acting in a different manner than before, you know? So
Are you a Last Jedi fan or no?
I love it. Yeah.
Okay. I loved it too.
I know everybody has to ask very carefully these days. It's so sad.
Like, in my story, I got into a point where people were like, well, did you like Last Jedi? And I go, did you? And if they go, no, I go, well, different strokes for different folks. And then I end it there. But if they do, I'm like, yeah, let's talk about it. Because I am just so done in my story.
Well, I'm afraid to ask because there's several roads we could go down, and those roads are bad roads.
Several roads.
And I was telling this to Megan, I don't care if people don't like The Last Jedi, but like at least give me a reason. Just don't be like, Rey's stupid and overpowering. Like, explain why you don't like it as a movie or as a story.
There's lots of concerns.
It's not a perfect movie in any way, shape, or form. But I'm just so happy. I have to keep her from watching Rebels because I know if she watches Rebels, she won't go back to Clone Wars.
Well, Rebels is funny too because just like Clone Wars, it did ramp up. Like Rebels was, you could definitely tell it was a Disney production, and it was like, you know, it was mostly like stormtroopers falling off their speeder bike and tumbling on the ground. Oh shit, you know. You okay? Yeah, I'm okay. George, you okay? Yeah, I'm okay. Dagnabbit, they got away, you know. But as it started heating up towards the end, the last couple seasons, then stormtroopers would die and fall into chasms, and like it got to a couple points that were actually like more horrifying than pretty much anything. Maybe in Star Wars up to this point, you know, an official Star Wars.
Actually, I was telling that's why I keep trying. Chris doesn't read any of the novels. No. He's not a novel person. But so I was telling him about how in
a lot of people do say I'm a novel person, though. I'm a big huge reader. That's the thing. I just like mostly don't like the writing in Star Wars world.
Ah, I see.
To him, Star Wars is a visual medium. So,
I understand it.
But, you know, I was explaining why, like, Rebels was so kiddie, because it's explained in Thrawn. And it's because of Price. Because Lothal wasn't considered an important planet. And she made it important. So, like, she forced the Empire to be like, look at my planet. This is my planet. It's here. So that's why in the first two seasons of Rebels, because Price is away at Coruscant, it's so kiddie, because they just have, like, Joe Schmoes running.
Oh, you're saying that Price is horrifying, so they had to up the ante?
No, not even that. It's just like during the most of the Thrawn novel takes place in the first two seasons of Clone Wars, like before Rebels and up through Rebels, mm-hmm. and it explains why Price wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a part where Minister Tua is like, Governor Price wish she could be here today, but she's not. But it's because like Lothal wasn't considered an important planet, so they just had like the very basics of the basics. But as the Rebels started upping their game, that's when Tarkin shows up. And then the Rebels up their game, and then Vader shows up. Mm-hmm. And they up their game, and then Thrawn shows up. And so that's why it's kind of kiddie in the beginning. But that's because during that time, Arinda in the Thrawn novels was pushing for Lothal to get more and more and more and more attention until the end of the Thrawn novels when she's like, I need the Seventh Fleet. And that's Thrawn Season 3. So that's why like I found that so fascinating reading the Thrawn novels, because I was like, this explains why Rebels is so kiddie in the beginning.
Because they don't have the heavy hitters.
Yeah, there's these two Imperial like lieutenants, and it's pretty much Abbott and Costello, and it's, oh, yeah, and they're just like, oh gee whiz, it's the Rebels. Oh no! And then, I'm gonna give you a tiny spoiler. Tarkin shows up. And
you already said that.
Yeah, and he's like, Tarkin shows up, and he's like, why haven't you guys dealt with the Rebels? And they're like, well, they're not doing anything, and he kills them.
Oh, the lieutenants?
Yeah. He kills them.
Well,
and he's like, well, there you go.
That's how we do.
And that's when it starts ramping up more and more and more and more. So, like, I keep warning Megan. I'm like, just know, beginning of Rebels is very kiddie, but just push through it. It's great.
Like Clone Wars. I started out going like, oh, this is just going to be adventure of the week and not have much heft to it. And then, you get slowly and surely, they just keep building till it's an ongoing storyline, you know?
It's an entire episode where Lando runs around with puffer pigs.
In
Rebels.
Oh!
Lando is fantastic in Rebels.
There are these like, pigs that, like, expand and then bounce around in little balls.
That's adorable. I'd like that. See, I think I like the kitty episodes.
Yeah.
No, they're fun.
Like, season one is fun Star Wars. It's just fun. It's Star Wars and it's fun. And it's to get to know the Ghost crew, because you want to get to know them as a unit before you start bringing in everything from Star Wars. You have to get to know them so they can grow.
If you're a fan of, like, the original trilogy and the guy Ralph McQuarrie, who did a lot of the production design for it, it's done in his style. So everything visually is very, like, Ralph McQuarrie painting. And sometimes they use creatures that didn't make it into, sketches that didn't make it into a Star Wars movie and stuff.
Hmm.
And what's his Zeb is basically one of the first character designs for Chewbacca.
I think you told me that.
Yeah. Chopper is really R2. You knew that one too.
Yeah.
So
it's cool.
But
well, I think I had not been, as I said earlier, I was a casual Star Wars fan. I liked it. So I have not been in the fandom for long at all. And I've found, as I've been, partaking of the various things, we recently listened to the radio play that came out on NPR back after New Hope. And I was telling Hope about it and she was like, oh, that part's in this, and this part's in that. And I like how everyone seems to be very respectful of using material that exists instead of just coming up with new things. And I like that a lot.
Now, something you and I have talked about.
Except for Zahn. He comes up with a lot of his own stuff. Like,
yeah.
A lot.
Like Coruscant.
Like Coruscant.
That was new. Something you and I... Because, like, you know me. Like, I'm a huge fan of the new canon. The fact that everything's connected and stuff like that. And that I can, read the Thrawn novel and, like, know what parts they're talking about. But I know you were saying that you weren't ready to, in your words, drink the Disney Kool-Aid.
I'm not ready to drink the Disney Kool-Aid.
And so, like, when you've been writing your fan fiction, you've been using a lot of the EU, and I've been sticking to a lot of new canon. So what is it about the EU opposed to the new canon that, like, really appeals to you?
It's not as neat and tidy, and there's a lot more to it. So I've been, because I've not been in the Star Wars fandom for long, as I'm working on my fanfic, I have to do a lot of research. And I'll look something up. I'll look up a planet, and I'll click the canon tab on Wikipedia, and it'll have a paragraph. And then I'll click the legends tab, and it'll have 12 pages. I'm like, great, I'll use this one. So a lot of it's just been the amount of information that the legends have. Canon is very neat and tidy and orderly, whereas legends might have 12 different people involved with this one thing, and there's so much more detail, and I like that.
See, I like the neat and orderly canon. Like, I can, like, if I wanted to delve into, like, hey, there's Riz Ahmed in my background. If I wanted to delve into, like, say, Rogue One stuff, there's an entire book on, like, Galen and Krennic's background if I wanted to read it. Or I could just let Rogue One stand on its own. And I like that. It's so neat and tidy.
I would think with fan fiction, having less information on stuff could give you, like, I guess, more leeway into what you can, what you can make up yourself, I guess.
That's interesting, because you always say that you like Mycilla. Scylla is the planet of the chicks.
Oh, she did such a good job.
And I haven't read much of things in Scylla. Like, I haven't read Outbound Flight, which is based, or I haven't read much, like, based in the Chiss Ascendancy. So I kind of read just the basics, and then I made up my own version of Scylla. And, well, let's talk fan fiction now. Chris, if you ever
want... That's all right with you, Chris.
You're not going to hear me complain. We got the two of you here at the same time. We might as well, right?
I mean, so there was also, like, what?
Since the two of you are in the same room together, we might as well, right? I mean, we got that opportunity.
So, like, for me, like, I kind of had to make a choice of I could either delve into tons and tons and tons of research or just kind of get the basics and make up my own Scylla. And so I know, like, the kind of basic facts and how it's set up and stuff like that. And then I just had to make a point of, this is now my world. I'm not going to delve into it anymore. I'm making up my own words, my own foods, and I'm making up my own world. And it's the world of my fan fiction. So it's like, and I know, I try to follow as much of the Thrawn novel timeline as I can. But at the same time, I've made changes. Like, you know, when Thrawn was lower in the ranks, he served under Commander Chino. He was this guy. And Chino's only in, like, what, a chapter and a half?
But he's so sweet.
He's so sweet. But, like, in my fanfiction, I have him being a co-commander with Thrawn. And that was a change that I actively made.
Which I think is so cozy and nice.
Yeah, but I made that as a change because I needed somebody to watch Thrawn's ship when he went on dates with my character. And to make it plausible of he's not shirking his duties because somebody else is there. So that was kind of I think, like, while having less information is good, I also, there's nothing wrong with having tons of research as well to fall back on.
When we're both very different. When it comes to our fanfic writing. Well, Hope was just talking about how she did, oh, yeah, I skimmed it and I'll just do my own thing. And she's brilliant at that. She comes up with amazing things. Whereas every time I need a planet in my fanfic, I pull up I have a tab in my internet browser of the Star Wars galaxy and I scan around and I'm like, all right, they're here. I need to find a planet that's about around this place. So I look and I'm like, okay, this planet has a cool name. Wikipedia, read about it. Not quite what I need. Go back, look at the map. And I've actually come up with some really good plot ideas from reading the Wikipedia articles, but I right. like to everything to be as based in what pre-exists as possible.
I made up Fakai, which is a planet.
Yeah. Comes up with all kinds of cool stuff. Whereas yeah. I was looking for a planet where a space battle could take place. And I found this planet called Dera. And I was like, oh, cool, it's a jungle planet. That's interesting. And I was just reading the Wikipedia page, and it turned out that it was kind of the Empire didn't really care about the planet at all, and it was just kind of forgotten. And I was like, that could lead to some interesting plot.
Because you're just so everybody knows, Valkyrie Strike is about Thrawn slowly becoming a rebel.
Yes, that's in his own way.
That's what her story is about, so.
Oh.
And I'm a historical fiction kind of writer, so
right,
basically
right.
researching my history of Star Wars and then fitting my stuff into it as close to the actual as possible.
So what do you like about writing fan fiction?
It's changed over the years. What I'm really enjoying about this fanfic right now, of course, is I'm getting to delve into this character that I'm just so fascinated with right now. It also is helping with my own book, helping me think about how to churn out words and how to think about developing some tension and character interaction. And so I think it's a great way to hone the writing craft and being able to have a preset group of characters and some preset settings to work with really helps you to get your ideas on paper faster than when you're just coming up with all your own stuff.
And we did it differently. I wrote a 50-page outline before I even wrote a single thing.
Yeah.
And I pretty much like write a chapter and then send it to you to beta, and then I start working on the next chapter. You're what, like 4 chapters ahead of where you have published?
Oh, well, I realized. I was like, okay, I'm going to write this chapter, and then I'll publish it online. And I was like, wait a second. I'm writing a story about Thrawn. I have to write like 4 chapters before I post because his mind will need to go out. Because of the way he thinks, I'm going to have to be able to go back and change things to fit. And
right, right.
He thinks a lot faster than I do, so I'm going to have to make sure that I don't write something and then have to go back and edit it online. So yeah, I'm writing chapters ahead.
Yeah.
And I don't outline anything at all. I just sit down and start writing. And Hope's like, how many more chapters? And I'm like, I don't know.
Meanwhile, I'm sitting on, I outlined everything beginning, middle, and end. So I have to know roughly where I'm going. And of course, things change along the way. Because like, as I was writing, Thras, who is Thrawn's brother in the EU, he, in my story, he's still back in Scylla. And he ended up having a head of a house, which is a character I made up named Aline. Well, Aline ended up being his boyfriend. And I was like, oh, and I never planned for Aline. He just kind of showed up in my brain, and I was like, who are you? And he's like, hi, I'm Aline. I'm Thras's boyfriend. And I was like, oh, hi, Aline. Welcome to my brain. And then, like, now looking back at it, I'm like, I need to go back and edit a couple earlier chapters. And it's just very mild. I've just added, like, a few, like, little things, like Cass, who is Thrawn's son in my book that I've made up, he mentions like Aline a little bit earlier, but now Aline's a big character in my book.
Yeah, she wrote like 60 pages of him and his romance with Thras.
Yeah, over their 18, over their like 30 years of growing up, I wrote a 2-chapter side story of just Thras and Aline's background.
You wrote a whole fanfic within your fanfic.
I wrote a fanfic within my fanfic, but like it's one of the things that, like, when I first outlined it, I didn't plan for Aline. And so now that I've written and he's naturally come up, I have to add him into the future outline. luckily, most of the story is from Thrawn and Kaya, who's my romance character I made up. But since it's mostly from their point of view, I don't have to worry about Elaine until much later to show up with Rhaes. But it's interesting that, like, we both have very different writing processes, and it's fun working together because our writing processes are so different and our styles are very different too. And we're both like, you're so much better at this. I'm like, I suck at this. You're like, no, you're wonderful. I'm like, don't tell me that, Megan. Don't.
So one of my big, besides working on my fan fiction, my other big Thrawn project right now is, as I'm reading Heir to the Empire, and because I'm not going to drink the Disney Kool-Aid, I'm trying to combine the two Thrawn timelines in my mind to make one continuous character arc.
From Rebels to Heir to the Empire?
Well, from the Thrawn book to Heir to the Empire.
Oh, yeah, because you haven't seen Rebels, duh.
Well, but the Thrawn book happens before Rebels, so yeah. Then, yes, yeah, whenever I do, but... and I'm not finished with Heir to the Empire yet, but Thrawn does some shocking things in there, based on the character that I meet in the Thrawn book, but I'm like, well, a lot of time has gone by. So I'm having fun kind of thinking about how that changes his character.
And it's actually interesting how we're both approaching Heir to the Empire. I'm having so much trouble getting into it. Like, it's actually incredibly hard for me to read.
Because you're a Clone Wars fangirl.
Well, a lot of it is just, like, I grew up, you know, I watched the movies when I was younger, too, but I didn't get into the fandom until the new canon. So, like, my love of Star Wars is the new canon. And I love how it all meshes together and everything's connected. And, you know, you might have a character in Clone Wars that could show up in a new movie. And I just, that's what I love about it. But reading Heir to the Empire is something I have to completely, like, detach myself away from the canon that I love so much. And it's like reading fan fiction. And it's incredibly difficult for me to, like, connect the two Thrawns because it's not how I see Thrawn, and it's also not how I see Star Wars canon in general.
See, I couldn't make it through the Zahn. I remember when they came out, and I was so excited that they were like, we're actually releasing these books, and they're going to be canon. So I'm like, all right, well, we're not going to get the movies, but this is what happened. And I remember getting about 3/4 of the way through the first book and going, I'm not enjoying this. And then I'm like, which is usually when I just go give myself permission to stop reading, which I used to not do as a kid. Whatever I was reading, I would plug all the way through it. But I was just like, it just, the writing style, the story, none of it did anything for me. It didn't paint a picture in my head.
It's been really interesting having finished Thrawn and mainly listened to the audiobook, and but I did read some of it as well, because it just so happened to fall during a Georgia road trip, so I listened to it there and back and finished it. But Zahn's style is very different from Heir to the Empire to Thrawn. You might find the Thrawn book a lot more appealing than Heir to the Empire. It's very different.
And it's very connected to Clone Wars and Rebels. Like, you know, I was laughing with Megan because I was like, oh my god, Minister Tua showed up. She's like, I don't know who that is.
And I don't remember that happening.
Yeah. But I'm like, Tua, I love her! But, like, you were saying...
Oh, I was just saying that it's interesting to see...
You were actually saying that you feel that the canon Thrawn novel is actually lazier than Heir to the Empire.
Yes, oh gosh, yes. I feel like Zahn's like,
feel like
I'm
going
to write this book now. Whereas Heir to the Empire is a lot more complicated and well thought out, I think.
And we were talking... Kind of the difference is because, like, you know, now it has... We were talking about, I was like, it probably seems lazier because he's not going to as many descriptions. But for somebody who might have watched Clone Wars or Rebels, you know, you can mention Minister Tua. I know who exactly that is. But you haven't watched Rebels yet, so she's just a random head that's talking to Price in the book. And so it seems lazy to you, but for me, I'm like, oh, it has something to fall back on, and I have a mental picture of what she looks like. Unlike Heir to the Empire, where I feel like it is very complicated and over-explaining. Like, I just got to a point where I am, where they go to Cloud City, and he spends, like, three paragraphs explaining this ship that looks like an umbrella.
And I thought that whole part was so cool.
And I'm just like, cool, it looks like an umbrella. I don't need three... What is this, like, Lord of the Rings? I don't need three paragraphs to explain a ship to me.
To be fair, I loved the Thrawn book, and I do not think it was, like, lazy bad. It's just the style was much more rushed.
Yeah.
I thought it was an amazing book. Loved it.
But, I mean, I think that's... A lot of it is just the different... Like, you love Anne Rice, and I'm just like, give me a Star Wars novel.
Have you ever finished an Anne Rice book?
Yeah.
Oh, you finished Blood and Gold.
I have Blood and Gold and Princess Dot, and I was reading Pandora.
Oh, I thought you never finished it, Princess Dot.
No, I finished it.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, I absolutely finished Princess Dot. And I started reading Pandora, and then I picked up Heirs of the Empire, and I probably won't get back to Pandora until I finish Throne Alliances and maybe push myself through Heir to the Empire. I think a lot of it, that's the difference between Heir to the Empire and Throne that it gets me, is that Heir to the Empire is from so many different points of view. It's like
lots of different.
It has Leia and Han and Luke and Mara Jade and Thrawn.
And Thrawn.
And the only person I care about.
It's Paleon's point of view, not Thrawn's.
Yeah, and Paleon. And I guess the only person I really care about in all that is Thrawn. I don't really care about everybody else, so I'm just like pushing through 40 pages until I can get back to Thrawn.
But you don't want to hear all about how Kashyyyk is set up and like how their elevators work? You don't want to know about their elevators, Hope?
No, I just want to see Thrawn do cool shit. That's all I fucking care about.
I want everything in Star Wars to work as if by magic.
Not even that. More or less.
I do.
I was telling Megan earlier, like, because, like, my bread and butter of Star Wars is Clone Wars and Rebels and that time period. Because, yeah, the original trilogy is great, and, like, that's the basis, and that's where everything is. It's not my favorite part of Star Wars. It's not what I deeply connect to, and it's not what the characters that I love and I feel. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. If I think hard enough about Ahsoka Tano, I can start crying, because she just means so much to me. And I never felt that for, like, Luke and Leia and Han and Lando, and I like them, but I just don't have an emotional connection to them. So, like, when I'm sitting here reading about, like, Han being scared that Leia's on diplomatic missions because she has babies, I'm like, I don't care. Give me Thrawn. Don't care. And I don't care about three paragraphs of Umbrella Ships on. Just give me back to Thrawn. And so that's what I loved about the Thrawn novel so much. It's three characters. Thrawn, Price, Eli. Usually Eli is with Thrawn, so they're half the book, and Price is the other half of the book.
It's true.
And even then, in Thrawn, we're in his head. We're not in Thrawn's head in Heir to the Empire, so you can actually watch him deduce a person, and you're in his head, and you're seeing his thoughts, and I like that about it. And then Price, I liked her in Rebels, and so I'm just like, cool, this is the time period I like.
That's why he had to cut out so many characters. Just to get inside Thrawn's head, he had to cut 25 characters out. In order to make space.
out of Heir to the Empire, we cut off all of that. But I'm actually, like, with Thrawn Alliances coming out tomorrow, I was telling Megan about this, I'm not going to be surprised if Paleon shows up. Because they did name-check Paleon in the last episode of Rebels. So I actually wouldn't be surprised if Zahn brought him back into his own work, because that was his first Watson.
Uh-oh, I hope something didn't happen to Pharaoh.
Oh, Pharaoh.
Because that's who... That's who he'd be replacing.
I know.
Maybe she leaves and goes to the Ascendancy, too.
I don't know. But I really...
She and Eli have been in love all along.
Karen Farrell must be protected at all times. But, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see Paleon show up in Throne Alliances out tomorrow. You guys, go pick it up. It's going to be great by the time the show comes out. I'm so excited, too. But I guess that's the difference. It's just, like, it's just really hard for me to read Heir to the Empire because a lot of it is just stuff in Star Wars I don't care about. Is not the part of Star Wars
like
I
all
love.
Those, you know, main characters.
You know, it took me a long time. I didn't actually fully appreciate Luke Skywalker until Last Jedi. Like, that was the first time I really appreciated Luke Skywalker.
You made a lot of fanboys cry just then.
I know. And it's not that I've always liked Luke, but that was the first time I'm like, yeah,
I cried.
Love Luke.
I cried at the end when he saw the two sons of Tatooine. Oh. And I grabbed my husband and was like, oh, God, he saw two sons.
Yeah, like that was like the first time I loved, and I think a lot is like, and I think this is a lot of problem that fanboys have with Last Jedi and stuff like that, is it was the first time they like Luke in the original trilogy was almost like
a Mary Sue.
No, I was just gonna say like a very traditional adventure character. Mm-hmm. He comes from a humble background and he becomes a hero. It's very straightforward. It's very fantastical. He has all these abilities. He goes through these trials, just like a Herculean trials, and he becomes a hero.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very... But I feel like Last Jedi was the first time that it really humanized him. And that's what I loved about stuff with Clone Wars. It humanized Anakin.
Oh, yeah.
It humanizes Ahsoka.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where I connected to it. And I felt like that was the first time I actually got to see who Luke Skywalker is as a person.
Hmm.
And that's why I loved him for the first time.
Interesting.
And same thing, like, and that's why I like Leia, and that's why I liked Han in Force Awakens. Han was the weakest of all of them, but of all the old people. But I mean, of course, he wasn't there the longest. But like,
his character is the weakest character of them all. He's a good character, but I mean, as far as story resonance goes, he's one of the weaker characters.
So, if you have not listened to the radio drama from NPR of Star Wars, have you listened to it?
Yes. I have them all on cassette.
Oh! We found it on CD, thankfully.
Remember, he's old.
I don't know if you remember.
I listened to them on the radio. I used to, like...
Oh, wow.
Like, I used to make my whole house come to a screeching halt because the speakers were down in our living room. So I would be like, everybody shut up. Okay, it's a commercial now.
The guy who does Han in that, he brings a lot to the character that Harrison Ford did not bring. The emotional, and they also add a little bit, like when he's trying to leave the Rebels after he drops off Luke and Leia. Luke's like, we gotta fight. And Han's like, no, I don't think so. Just give me the money. And they're like, we don't have any money, sir. And he's like, give me some parts then. And they're like, we can't spare any parts. And he's like, I don't care. Give it to me anyway. And Leia's like, you're heartless. And he's like, I sure am. And then he goes off and Leia's like, Luke, you got to talk to him. Or Leia might talk to him too. And he sounds like he's on the verge of tears. He's like, I've been through this before. And I've done my time. And this is a waste of time. And they're all going to die. And it was so powerful. And I wish they had put that in the movie because it really helped bring a pathos to Han that, one, a harshness that he's seen things that Luke has never seen, and the sadness that he has of his past, which then kind of comes up in Solo. I'm assuming that's kind of what they were alluding to. And I really liked it. And I think it made Han Solo a much more compelling character.
Actually, my favorite part of Solo is when he was in the Empire and he was fighting in a war.
So cool.
That was so cool. And then meeting Chewie. And then, that's my favorite part of the movie. Because a lot of people were like, the first 30 minutes are the roughest. I'm like, that's my favorite chunk of the movie.
Me too.
Yeah. That was where the most interesting stuff was happening.
Yeah.
Because I think that, yes, part of the reason I think Han Solo seems to be kind of the weaker character is Harrison Ford has a very deadpan delivery, which is interesting, especially for film, to watch him.
His snarky little faces.
He's snarky, and he makes really interesting faces, and he's tough. But the guy in the radio drama, he is very emotional. It's cool.
What are you about to say?
I was just going to say, Han Solo sort of had his arc, though, in the original trilogy.
He did.
From going from that to, you know, full on, I'm with the Rebels, I'm a hero,
yeah.
I'm not even playing it, he's relaxed and, like, a little freer with his emotions, you know. And so, okay, there's your arc for Han Solo. I mean, you can have him do story stuff, but... He, it's not as much of the, like, Luke and Leia are brother and sister with super midichlorian counts and the kids of Darth Vader, you know? So he's never had the... Scott Gardner, who's the other two freak, he was always just like, I'm not excited about the Solo movie because he's like, I know his character arc and I know what's basically going to be in that movie, you know? You're not going to learn anything... You're going to learn how he took that journey, but you know it's not going to be like, oh, Han Solo had a really bad childhood. You sort of assume that, so.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know. Like, the only thing that I was like, I felt that really... Donald Glover was just lovely as Lando.
It was so good.
I'd watch Donald Glover as Lando at all times.
Well, Lando's a even greater character because he's just a more flamboyant version of Han Solo and a more unrepentant version of Han Solo, too. So he could be fun. It's sort of like Han Solo might be more like the Cad Bane and Lando's more like the Hondo, you know.
Sorry, my kitty's outside
She's
the window.
Cat.
Hi, honey.
Oh, and also about the radio drama real quick. Hope, there's this really creepy, you know how they bring in the torture droid for Leia?
Yeah.
They put that scene in the radio drama, and it's creepy. He's like, your father wants you to say what the plans are. Tell your daddy. It's like, it's really creepy.
Your father commands you to tell us. Yes. Don't you wish to please your father?
Yes.
Then tell me what you did with those plans. Say the words.
But,
your father orders you to tell us.
Father would...
You try my patience. Tell me what was done with those plans.
No.
Listen to my voice. You are now in great pain. Excruciating pain.
No. Oh, please.
Pain. A universe of it. Your world is nothing but pain.
Don't make it stop.
Tell me what I wish to know.
Help me.
Tell me what I wish to know. Where are the plans?
I can't tell.
Your skin is afire.
Oh,
you're
no.
burning.
Oh, no.
Your nerve endings are in flames.
Oh.
Your flesh is being torn apart.
Make it stop. Please make it stop.
Yeah, well, I think the radio drama is what, like 4 hours long, something like that.
It's really long.
Yeah.
That and Empire are both 4 hours long, and then when they did Return of the Jedi, it was just straight. They did not spend the money on Return of the Jedi.
Oh.
You can find them. There are also book versions of the scripts for those.
Oh.
That are really good. I've acquired them all through eBay. Over the years, but they're not that expensive. You could get them for like $4 or $5 on eBay, and those are really good. Like you were saying, so the voice, I think there's two voice actors who play Leia throughout the whole thing.
Interesting.
And they're both actually really good, and I can't remember the name. One of them is better than the other. One of them's really good, and I think she's the one who's in Empire.
Oh, okay.
And,
I'm looking forward to that. I didn't really love the woman who plays Leia in New Hope. She was fine.
She was okay, yeah.
I'm looking forward to hearing someone better. It's almost impossible to beat Carrie Fisher, of course.
No.
She has this gravitas in her voice.
It's hard to get that sass correct.
Oh, yeah.
So
we're talking about, like, after she passed away, like, how they were going to do her. And it's like, well, even if they had somebody, like... Because we're talking about in Resistance, because Resistance is Prequels Awakens. We're like, well, if they have Leia in it, they already have a Leia for Rebels to play young Leia. And they're like, but to do it for, like, older Leia in Resistance, it's just like, you need to find somebody who smoked, like, 20 packs a day for 10 years.
Yeah.
It's just really hard to do that.
The great thing about the radio thing is basically in Star Wars and Empire, I wish they'd done it for Episode 1, 2, and 3. That would have been really fun to hear how they... But basically in those... In Star
we
Wars,
should do it. You could do your Fry Anakin.
That's true. I should. I was doing an adaptation of the. I did do the first chapter of the Star Wars novelization with full sound effects and voice.
You did?
Yeah.
I've never heard this.
It was a Star Wars monthly. It was one of the first Star Wars monthly Mondays where Scott Gardner first started working at Disney and like had to take a couple months off. So I did one, and I did it as if I had never heard Star Wars before. So none of the characters had, you know, were like C-3PO has more of an Australian accent, and you know, I didn't use Star Wars music or Star Wars special effects. I used canned music and special effects and classical music.
That's great.
Above her towered the threatening bulk of Darth Vader. Red eyes glaring behind the hideous breath mask. A muscle twitched in one smooth cheek, but other than that, the girl didn't react. Nor was there the slightest shake in her voice.
Darth Vader, I should have known. Only you would be so bold and so stupid. Well, the Imperial Senate will not sit still for this. When they hear that you've attacked a diplomatic mission...
Senator Leia Organa,
Vader rumbled softly, though strongly enough to override her protests. His pleasure at finding her was evident in the way he savored every syllable.
Don't play games with me, Your Highness, he continued ominously. You aren't on any mercy mission this time. You passed directly through a restricted system, ignoring numerous warnings and completely disregarding orders to turn around until it no longer mattered.
The huge metal skull dipped close.
I know that several transmissions were beamed to this vessel by spies within that system. When we trace those transmissions back to the individuals with whom they originated, they had the poor grace to kill themselves before they could be questioned. I want to know what happened to the data they sent you.
Neither Vader's words nor his inimical presence appeared to have any effect on the girl.
I don't know what you're blathering about, she snapped, looking away from him. I'm a member of the Senate on a diplomatic mission to...
To your part of the Rebel Alliance, Vader declared, cutting her off accusingly. You're also a traitor.
His gaze went to a nearby officer.
Take her away.
She succeeded in reaching him with her spit, which hissed against his still-hot battle armor. He wiped the offensive matter away silently, watching her with interest as she was marched through the accessway into the cruiser.
Did you watch the Blue Shadow Virus episodes of Clone Wars? It had like the evil like Nazi and
if
like
she
doctor.
Did, she would have said yeah.
It had the virus that was like a blue smoke.
Is that the one where they had to make the cabin really cold?
No, they were, like, it was Padme and Ahsoka trapped underground with clones with a deadly virus that's just blue air. There's a doctor in that, and he goes yeah. No, he's like a Nazi Joseph Mengele from the Nazis.
Oh, jeez.
And he's like, I will kill you all.
One of two that so far have shown up in Clone Wars of just obvious, like, Mengele-type characters. Yeah, one it's being a droid, and one was not a droid, but he was all kind of half-mechanized, too.
It's almost like the Empire is meant to be this kind of Nazi-like.
You're being sarcastic, aren't you?
Yes.
That was hardcore sarcasm. She's looking at me slowly, smiling as she said it. And the first word is like, oh no, I don't know, like maybe like the alt-right or something. I don't know.
Less effective Nazis.
Yeah. They're still there.
Nice imagery, though. Very pretty.
With all the red and
and nice colors.
It's almost like they took from like World War II or something.
Mm. Like my dad was a Nazi, so like, I got all this stuff and this nice Hugo Boss suit. I think I'll wear it.
Oh my god!
We're totally like the Empire guys, only we're called the New Order. That sounds really great.
Yeah, and the Hux. Hux, you look wonderful. You look fabulous, Hux. I loved you in Harry Potter. Disturbing.
I can't do his voice.
I love you in Harry Potter, Hux.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. My mom here.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, it's raining.
Oh,
yeah,
raining.
I saw that. And of course, the cat's not in the window anymore. She's like, fuck rain! Yeah! Star Wars. This is what I do every Monday, only we talk about episodes.
Yeah.
And we get into like deep discussions about episodes and characters and stuff like that.
Yeah, I know.
We do commentaries.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you listened to one whole episode.
I did. I'm not much of a podcast person, actually.
Yeah. I find that very interesting because, like, you listen to audiobooks, though.
I do, but not all the time.
That's true. You prefer Kindle.
I don't prefer them, but the guy who does the Thrawn books is so great. His voice is so dreamy.
The only thing I have is I wish he would, like, emote Thrawn a little bit more.
Now, what about podcasts that are, like, there's podcasts like Hope and I mean, most of the podcasts on Two True Freaks are two people just sort of talk. They're just like this. They're just, you know, people getting together shooting the shit.
Never been anything like talk radio, though. Or,
no, well, generally not.
Yeah, because I mean, there's things that are some podcasts are more like a drama or a produced NPR type of, you know, docu radio show or something like that. It just doesn't.
My husband forces me to watch NPR or listen to NPR sometimes.
Oh,
I don't much care for it.
I can't do NPR for very long.
I'm just not
got into NPR, and I was just like, eh.
I'm just not a radio person in general. Like talk radio. Again, I'll do audiobooks sometimes, but it has to be. I have to be in the right mood for it.
Right.
Got to be the right book. I don't know. I like to read things and see things.
It's funny. I can't do NPR, but I can do like a podcast.
NPR is a lot like podcasts.
I know, but I think it's because like with podcasts.
It's almost like that they were like a precursor.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Shut up.
Well, I think
what it is though is like with a podcast, I can choose the topic. So like I'd rather listen to like hours of someone discussing like themes of Star Wars opposed to like let me tell you about.
They don't talk about Star Wars much on NPR, I've found.
Yeah, and like I remember because my stepmom listened to NPR when she drives, and I was driving along, and they were just doing this segment about this person who builds guitars. I'm just listening. I'm like, I don't care. I don't care.
It's supposed to broaden your mind, but at least make like you a better person.
Podcast, well, like, yeah, they're an actual topic, and I can choose the topic. So if I was listening to like Rebels Chat is a podcast I had to listen to because I love John Marie and her mom. Well, because one thing, I love Rebels, but I also listen to it because like,
you do?
Shut up. But like also because I like Jonna Marie and her mother is great because she, for one, she's just lovable and adorable, and I love her mom. But she's also like coming from like a place of, she's from another country, so she's kind of like looking at it from this like non-American point of view, and so that makes it really fascinating because sometimes a lot of the points she'll bring up is points that are not from an American point of view, which makes it really interesting. Huh. So it's a point of view about Star Wars, about this thing about Star Wars that I love, but I've never really considered before. And so that's why I kind of like podcasts a little bit more, because it's specified to something that I love versus NPR is on and they're talking about this guy who builds guitars.
I like the I like what NPR does. I just don't like how they do it.
It's so dry too.
I don't mind dry as long as dry is fascinating, but NPR is also like purposely mild. And to the point of where it's never going to offend anybody or never really strike a hard opinion or so, which, I mean, I don't need it to be like talk radio yelling or something, but they go almost to the extreme of where it's like a guy building a guitar isn't going to, you know, offend anybody, but you could get, there's so many more artists that are more interesting, weirdo artists who are doing something exciting.
I mean, look at like you know, people listen to us because we have passion, and like, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine, they're like, yeah, I listen to this wrestling podcast, I don't even watch wrestling, but the hosts are so animate. And they're so passionate, and it's just, I listen to it because of them, and they're, like, vigorous, and they have these opinions, and it's fun. And that's another reason why I like listening to podcasts, because a lot of times, like, I listen to it for the listeners, because I like the listeners, even if I don't always know the topic.
Well, if somebody's passionate and they're having fun, it's contagious, even, you know.
If you don't know the topic.
If you don't know what's going on, you know, you just sort of can get caught up in it. So, and I mean, that's what I've heard a lot is, you know, and that's the thing is we're not making money here, so we might as well be having fun doing it, and I think we're pretty much do that
because we love it.
It's definitely not a slog to, I mean, sometimes editing just in general is a tough job, but it still always ends up being enjoyable, and doing like recording the show itself is like high point of my week, you know. So
yeah, writing outlines is the hardest part because I just
the homework. You know, yeah, but you gotta you know.
But actually doing it is the fun. Like I love doing this, and I love talking to you every week, and
aww,
and it's just, it's my high part too. I just I love doing it, and I, you know, I, yeah,
so
I work
hope so. This is like episode 130 or something like that, or 129, something like that.
Like I can talk Star Wars at work. I work in a comic store, but even then, like, I'm usually with a customer, and I can't get into like details. But like with Chris, like, we can talk about the in-depth PTSD of Ahsoka Tano.
Well, you know that there's another person that week who's gonna watch the episode you're watching and is sitting there like analyzing it and preparing to talk about it. So.
Yeah.
That, you know, when, I mean, that was one of the things. When Rebels came out, it took me a few episodes to relax enough to just watch Rebels, because as soon as, like, I would pop up an episode of it and, you know, it would start up and I'd be reaching for my notebook to start taking notes on it. And I'm like, no, that's like another 2 years, dude. Just sit back. You can just watch it. That's for the second time that you watch this.
Yeah.
You're going to have to take notes. But taking notes is fun, you know. Sometimes I'll be taking notes on a Clone Wars episode just, like, laughing to myself because I'm like, oh, no, I know where this is leading to.
Well, my husband does the same thing. He was watching Batman Mask of the Phantasm one night and just taking notes. I was like, honey, what are you going to do with those? He's like, I don't know. You got to take notes.
I agree that that's a note-taking worthy movie, too. I think that's the best Batman movie yet so far, actually.
Oh, yeah, yes. I don't really have a horse in the game, but Lauren's like, yes, it's the best movie of all time. I'm like, yes, dear, it's very good. It's very nice.
I really think your husband should have some kind of movie blog. I think he'd be really good at it. He'd be a really good movie critic.
He'd be great. Yeah.
Well, Chris, we're probably going to mosey, so where can people find you?
You can find me. Oh, I just wanted to say before we go, though, to everybody out there, now with this new announcement, and I know this is going to make Hope sweat, but now you're going to get two more Rexvolutions instead of just one more Rexvolution.
Rexvolution?
I should just let you listen to a
wrist brace, because you're going to be doing a lot more writing.
Oh my god.
Every year we do a summary of the, you know, of the
season. At the end of every season we do a recap. I have to tell the journey of Rex from I have to recap the season from the point of view of Rex.
It's Hope just talking stream of consciousness. Of course, I know you've written like a few notes and stuff.
No, I honestly just pull up the episode list and I just go episode by episode.
And it generally goes for about, wouldn't you say, 20 minutes to a half hour? Yeah. Usually.
Wow. It's 20 minutes. The longest one was season 4 because it had the Umbara arc, which is the big
Rex in that one.
It's his big Rex. It's his big arc of all of Clone Wars, and I literally talked for like 45 minutes.
Wow.
And it was long.
I'm not surprised.
And at the end of every Rexvolution, she goes, "That was terrible. I think that was the worst Rexvolution everywhere." Meanwhile, but you're on a podcast and you don't know that the entire world's like giving it a standing ovation at that point, you know?
I think at one point, like, Dave Filoni came in. He was like, "Rex, I'm here." And he's like, "I like your head." And Dave Filoni's like, "Thanks." I just babble for like 20 to 40 minutes.
Yeah.
It's quite entertaining.
I believe it.
You know me as a person, I babble.
You do. You babble.
Well, Chris, next week we're getting back to the grind. Well, this is I don't even know what's coming out next week because...
It's funny, you got in ahead of Hope's other friend.
Yeah, Billy. When I recorded with Billy and Mom when we were in Florida.
But
because
this
is a news thing, I'm going to put it out first.
So next week you guys are gonna get an extra bonus, I would say double size episode of J Guys and Jedi, where we talk a lot of Star Trek.
Ooh, I missed the Star Trek discussion.
This will be our second because my mom's a Trekkie. So when I went to Florida 2 years ago, I just drank wine and got drunk, and Mom and Chris talked Star Trek. And then when we went down to Florida last week, Billy came with me, and she's a Star Trek fan. So Billy, Mom, and Chris talked Star Trek,
We set the theme of this episode as being like, all right, everybody gangs up on Hope and starts to tell her where her entry point into Star Trek is going to be, which is obviously Star Trek: The Next Generation. But
that's what I'm watching right now.
That's the one for Hope. That's the one that I think will...
It's really good.
We'll get her into the Star Trek. But there was a lot of drinking going on. So it's...
I didn't drink as much this time because I was getting over food poisoning. I didn't drink as much this time.
My favorite is your stepdad. That man is a rock.
He is.
That man has the patience of... His name is Dan, right?
Yeah, Dan.
Yeah, I know this because he was probably sitting right there and listening.
He was in the living in the kitchen,
just keeping his mouth shut. But there's one point where they were like, maybe Dan has something to say. Dan, 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 for maybe about 5 minutes, with three women just like
Dan
browbeating.
Did he say anything?
Him.
No.
Yeah.
not a word.
He actually, you couldn't see it. He was just staring at us, eating like eating food, just staring at us.
Yeah, just,
and we're just like, Dan, come here, Dan.
Just letting it pass through him and just going, nope, I'm not. Just quiet dignity is how I describe it.
And then when he was finally going to bed, I was like, Dan, what do you think of Star Trek? He's like, it's great. Good night.
Well. It was funny because I think he was trying to tell you guys to keep it down a little bit because he said, I don't mean to be a party pooper, but he didn't say go to bed. I'm going to lay down. And then you were like, guys were like, okay, before you go, do you like Star Trek? I like Star Trek. Do you like Star Wars? I like Star Wars. Good night.
Chris. So, I just pulled up this picture where we have Hope's computer up And she sent me a wonderful Christmas card, and she reminded me that you were the one that did it with my dog's head photoshopped on Spider-Man.
Spider-Ham. That was you.
Yeah.
I vaguely remember that.
It's beautiful. I love it so much. Thank you.
Oh, thanks. I always appreciate getting a good Photoshop assignment. Those are always a high point.
I never noticed that it said Peter Parker. Oh boy!
I think when I printed it, I could only do this much.
Oh,
because I think I had to adjust the image.
I'm glad I got to see it now.
Yeah, so I did that much. But yeah, Chris was the one that made it for you. I was like, Chris, I need you to do this Photoshop for me.
Yep, that's our dog Stella.
We call her the pig. Pig, pig, pig.
Thank you.
Oh, that's why I use Peter Porker, the Spectacular Spider-Ham. Okay.
Yeah, because she grunts all the time,
so they call her Pig.
Yeah. I like grunty dogs.
She's very cute. She goes.
Is she a pug?
No, she's a I don't know what. Well, that's her in the picture.
Yeah, well, she's... It was so long ago. I just vaguely remember doing it. I can't.
She's a pit bull mix kind of dog.
Yeah, I have the pug that smells and is a mutant.
Well, punks are grunters. Pugs are grunters. So I
always... yes. Yeah, she is not a pug. Though I think she thinks she is. She's cuddly.
Yeah.
And grunty. And 60 pounds.
All right, Chris, we're going to mosey. Where can people find you?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, my luxurious mansion / fortress of solitude, except there's like 35 other people camped out there. Book depository of podcasts. That's on the web. You can go there. You can subscribe. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, too. You can go to Facebook and go to the Two True Freaks page on there, where all of our podcasts will pop up for your perusal. And we have the Two True Freaks Cantina, where you can talk about all the important nerd stuff. And there's a bunch of our shows also have their own Facebook pages, which you can discover through those. We have a Twitter page run by the legendary, and as we will find out next month, as you and your mom and your friend drunkenly harangue him, very popular Gene, the podcasting machine.
Ba-dum-bum, ba-dum-bum. Gene!
He is a prince among men.
Yeah, there's a part where we just
prince among men and one woman. And yeah, where can people find you, Hope? Oh, you my God, now you get to talk. Oh, yeah. Okay, go through your spiel, because now it's even more awesome this month.
Yeah. So you can find me at Jagos and Jedi at Twitter. I run our Twitter account. And you can also find me at Hope Molinax on Twitter. You can also find me on Archive of Our Own. I write a Thrawn fanfiction called Forces of Gravity. It's a cheesy romantic that might actually get you to start watching Clone Wars after 10 years of harassment.
Yeah, so for some reason, you haven't watched Clone Wars yet, you might read Hope's fanfic, and it might inspire a love of it in you.
So it is a romance, and it is covering a lot of the Thrawn novel as well. So it's set between Clone Wars and Rebels, and it has Cad Bane in it, and it has Thrawn in it, and Toto, and all that too. And I also beta read a wonderful fan fiction called Valkyrie Strike by the wonderful Megan, who is sitting right beside me.
And it's under my internet name of Calypsan, Calipsan.
It's also on Archive of Our Own, or yes. AO3.
And it's a story about Thrawn deciding that in order to serve his duties to the Chiss, he might be better off working with the Rebels instead of the Empire.
It's fascinating.
Thanks.
And now I finally get the chance to go, like, how's Hope doing with the beta reading? Are you satisfied with her work?
Oh, yeah, she's great. She helps me with my character development, and
she helps me make Thrawn sound smart.
Oh, I help you.
Yeah, she's like, Hope,
So she helps you make Thrawn sound smart, and you help make him sound human? Is that the...
Probably more of the other characters, like Eli and stuff.
Yeah, she helps me find out where people need to be more described and scenes need to be better elaborated on. She's really good with character development.
I just realized another important piece of Star Wars stuff that happened at Comic-Con. Her universe is releasing a clothing line for both men and women that's for the Clone Wars 10th anniversary, and there's a Captain Rex jacket. I don't care how much money it costs. I'm buying that fucking Captain Rex jacket. I don't care. It's gonna be mine.
Wow. Anyway. Yes. Hope's been giving me feedback on fanfic and everything for a long time, so I always value her input.
So, like, it helps that we're both very different writers, so we're very good at seeing other things that we don't see. We keep joking that we're going to write a book together one day, because our...
Well, we kind of are. Like, my fanfic's a fanfic of your fanfic.
You guys should, you guys should do one of those books where, you know, you slop them together and then, you know, you read one book and then you flip the book over and read it the other way, upside down with the other story in it.
That's funny.
You know, we actually, like, slightly started plotting out a book to write and then we just roleplayed it.
Which one was that?
The one with the mummy and Frankenstein.
I think you guys should
invent the fanfic flip book. and then in the corner you can get like some of our artist friends to do a little flip animation of Thrawn making out with somebody or something.
just a gentle person.
If you flip it one way, it looks like they're breaking up, but when you flip it the other way, they're getting together.
Aww.
Well, each one would have to relate to the general feel of the story.
Well, for yours, he's kind of breaking up with Eli, and for mine, he's getting together.
Tumultuous relationship.
And with mine, he's getting together with Kaya, so it'll work.
True. Tumultuous friendship, I'll be clear about that.
Yeah, they're not dating in yours.
No, they're not dating.
Sadly.
As unpopular as that is, they're just friends.
Yeah.
They're very good friends.
Good friends. Just good friends. Touch penises.
No, they
sometimes
don't.
They
no,
touch penises.
They don't do that.
They touch butts.
No,
they touch butts together.
No. I don't even know
what
they touch.
Stand tough on your fan fiction, guys.
Thank you.
Don't let her ruin your fan fiction with penis touching. She'll have everybody touching everybody's penis.
A pretty rare non-sexual fanfic for me.
You write such good sex scenes.
Aw,
you helped me, like, with all my sex scenes. I was like, here's my sex scene, now Megan, make it better. And she was like, okay, and she just made it so much better. Mm-hmm. So in my Thrawn fanfiction, when you get to the big Kaya sex chapter, you thank Megan for making it so good.
Hear that, Chris? When you get to the big Thrawn Kaya sex
scene. Oh, wait, Dirty Yoda's here.
Yoda has some story ideas.
Hi, Yoda, how are you this week?
Have notebook full of them. Interesting stories about very small hero. Secret agent.
Yes. You gotta get that swamp water out of your pants.
Yoda's our third podcaster.
Oh, Yoda.
Yoda drains the swamp.
you know how in the beginning of Clone Wars they have the little platitudes?
Yeah.
We do Dirty Yoda in bed.
Oh, yes. I remember that from the episode. Yeah.
All right, Chris. I will talk to you next week, then. We'll be continuing Season 6.
Yeah, well, we'll be talking about that next week. You guys are going to be listening to Hope and her mom and
Billy.
And Billy rolling around on the floor, wind up, except for Billy, who's shandied.
Oh, yeah, the Shandy stroke back. All right, you guys. See you next time. You want to say bye?
Bye. Bye,
bye.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
Yes.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.